And we're live with another Block Studios. Here we go.
Yes, amazing. Aaron.
How are you?
Good.
My greatest interest in NFTs in the beginning was the one-to-one relationship between the artist and the fan. Whatever that transaction may be, doesn't need to be monetary, doesn't need to be, it could be anything. It could be like, hey, I drew a picture, you can have this NFT, you know, put it, whatever, just so that we have a communication that's sort of, it's bi-directional to some degree. And although I like the idea of the value proposition of dropping people who already have a fan base to do some more stuff there, and there's revenue generated and all that, to me, that's a very Web 2 version of Web 3, right? You're taking an existing, it's almost like a merchandising thing, right? It's just another form of merchandise. And here's my way of doing, you know, like if Steve Aoki drops an NFT, the thing does amazingly well, but it's because of Steve Aoki, not because of anything else, right? What I did start to look into, and as and why I haven't personally actually dropped any music NFTs, although I've been working like all kinds of people working on different projects, helping them with things, and you know, what I started looking at some of the downsides when you're in the crypto community and in the NFT community, there are a lot of faceless players. Part of the I think interesting part of being in crypto is that you could have this alternative, you know, persona. You can hide behind a wallet address. You could be a group of people behind a wallet. You can be whoever you want on Discord. All of that's cool. You could be 5 years old and have a wallet. You know, like it's really anonymous. And I get it from a computer programmer from that sort of mindset, right? Yeah. Everyone likes that sort of idea of being, I don't know, a genie or, you know, you're a ghost, right? And everyone likes to be a ghost. But as money gets involved and as people who are forward facing like myself, you all know who I am, right? And this is now a lot of the interviews I've done have been just audio interviews, but as we move forward, like I did a bunch of Discord interviews and everybody's got their like avatar up except me and the other musicians. And because there's no point for us to do that, because you all know who we are. But what a lot of the projects didn't get in the beginning was that because we're forward facing, there's an immediate connection between at least one real entity and the NFT itself. And so that changes the value of the NFT in a lot of different ways, because there's less speculation, but it puts ownership on it and from an artist standpoint. So as an artist, it takes forever to build a community. It just takes forever. Yeah. There's no such thing as an overnight success. That's overnight in the public's, the mainstream's eyes. But, you know, you got to grind as long as it takes to build your first 10 followers, to get your next 1,000 followers, to have people who actually listen to your music. I've been doing this for 25 years. I've done about 10, 20 million streams on Spotify, and I'm still grinding. So anyone who tells you that this is like easy, you know, only A-list artists are at that level where the money is just printing itself.
Yeah.
So one of the weird things about the security part of an NFT is, and I'm sure you've noticed it, maybe your media is not as negative as our media is, but it's this started in the UK, where the UK loves to build up somebody because they love to destroy them afterwards and then build them back up again. You know, so like a good example of that would be Lily Allen. They loved Lily Allen, you know, in the UK. She was the best ever. And then they destroyed her in the media and then they built her back up again. So in the America, our artists learned that. So people like Kanye and the Kardashians and those people, they ride it up and down. They don't care if it's negative or positive, negative or positive. They'll say anything and do anything just to stay in the media. Gotcha. Even tank their, what's seemingly to tank their career for a good period of time, knowing that they're going to have enough whatever to drive it back up again, right?
Yeah.
It's just this constant cycle of if I'm in the media, I can just get press, and therefore people want to buy my brand no matter what it is. And everyone forgets what you did to do, you know, like you drop your sex tape and everyone goes down. You know, you marry somebody, your thing goes up. You have a kid, your thing goes up. Your kids get arrested. You know what I mean? It's, like, it's crazy. But so that's from a security standpoint, you could honestly, anyone who's doing this could short their own stock, so to speak. You could short your own NFT. You could play the whole thing backwards, where you could be shorting the value, you know, of the whitelist even. You could, you know, it's so there's a lot of weird plays that could go on.
Yeah.
That again, I'm not saying I want to be involved in any of that stuff, but like I started looking at it from a security standpoint, and that's where it gets tricky. Because if it's altruistic and we're trying to all do well together, that's good. But if you already have money and you know that you tell everybody it's going to be at this value and everyone's like, yeah, we're going to get it at this value, and you're selling down here because you know it's going to end up over here. You know, I'm getting my fingers, but like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. If you're still like, if the value's up here and you know it's going to be down here, so you sell here, you're driving the market in a certain direction. You also could drive the market the day you do something horrible that day.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. It's a weird time, and I love that it's so open and that we don't really know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But from an artist standpoint, for me, it's hard for me to like get behind projects 100% because I really need to know what's going on, because I don't want to kill my fan base.
One thing that I saw that you use is a platform called Mixcloud, where you can build communities, get paid directly. It looks like they take care of the music copyright. I saw that there's a few electronic artists on there. I saw Fatboy Slim, for example. Is that something that's an idea that could be improved with Web3? Or is that something that it works so well, it couldn't really be outmatched by a new technology coming in?
Let's be honest about the music business. The music business does not work. The way that the music business works, and I always have to describe this to people, the labels, the way the major label system works is that they're basically banks with a marketing team.
Yeah.
And they also control distribution and where your music can get placed in terms of radio. They have the money to get it to all these places. It's basically a money printing organization. You know, the scale is tipped way in their favor, way. They do horrible deals with artists where they take most of the ownership of the music. So if you went to go get a mortgage for your house, you'd be looking at 3-5% on that mortgage. So if you took a $2 million mortgage, you know, you'd be paying 5% or 4% royalties on that, whatever, for the length of the mortgage. And you could refinance it if the finances change. The deals for record labels are like 75% to the label. Can you imagine signing a mortgage where you had to make 75? That was what it's a horrible deal.
Yeah.
And they just give you a little advance. And then, but what it allows you to do is get into the system. And then you have this big marketing engine behind you.
Yeah.
Web3 can change all that because of your direct to fan relationship ability. And more what I'm discovering is that if you create a DAO for a singular item is easy. I don't mean it's easy in general, but like if everyone wants to buy the principal a new car because he was wonderful and he's retiring, if you make a DAO that everybody who graduated from this high school was going to contribute whatever they contribute and buy an NFT to buy, you know, to fund this guy's car, you could be, you know, everybody from multi different townships and all these could all put money into this guy, and somebody with a big checkbook could be like, you know what, I just love the idea of this, I'm going to buy a million NFTs, buy this guy a car. It's a really easy, focused way of doing something, crowdsourcing.
Yeah.
Right? With music, you need multiple people to do different work. You need people to filter what music is being put forward. You need people to market the music. You need people to help sell the music or, you know, distribute the music. You need people to put the music in music streaming services. There's a lot of different avenues. You need to help the band go on tour. There's a lot of different stuff that you need to do.
Yeah.
So a DAO would be a better suited animal, I think, over time for musicians, because you could crowdsource a really interested fan base that you could grow with over time. Mm-hmm. And you would bring in other like-minded musicians and fans and people who want to be involved in the music business and have success in your career on not just I like to listen to that music.
Gotcha.
Like, you could be an amazing graphic designer who works for, I don't know, it doesn't matter who you work for, you make enough money, right? You make plenty of money being a graphic designer, but you really love music, right? So, but you don't want to like be making album covers for, you know, $30 an album cover, because that's not a career for you. But yeah. For the 10, 15 bands that you love in this DAO, you're like, you know what? I've got 50 extra hours a year that I want to put into this band. I'm going to create amazing art that has no bounds.
Yeah.
Right. There's no corporate person telling me that I have to do X, Y, and Z. So I'm going to make this whole series that I've always wanted to have a home, give it to these musicians or give it to this one band, have a stake in that band, If the band blows up, well, maybe then, like, you remember that? I don't know if you know the band Iron Maiden. Remember Iron Maiden?
Yeah.
Do you remember metal fans definitely. At all? Yeah, so the guy who draws the Eddie pictures, the little, the, right? That was as much as a marketing tool as you could possibly have for any band. I remember seeing those album covers in record stores, dating my whatever. You go and see this big album cover with that crazy beast on the front. And you were like, I need to know what that music is. This is insane looking. So you'd get that album and you put it on. If you loved metal, you was like, oh my God, this is so good. But that character became sort of part of the band. They eventually had like a 50-foot Eddie on stage, and all the staging was made out of like all of the art, right?
Yeah.
But that kind of stuff doesn't happen anymore because it's so corporate now. Everything is just so like, this algorithm says that the fans don't really like you, or the asset algorithm says, you know, we love you. But that's not really how people fall in love with music.
Yeah.
Things change over time and people grow over time, and things that they might have gotten interested in the beginning, they forget about and they start liking something else about a band. So the algorithm may have gotten you in, or you may have not liked that original song, but you like the album cuts. I don't know. That's why I think a DAO is interesting, don't you? You know, you mean to see those different verticals that all have to work together.
No, I think that's really interesting. So just to clarify, what you're saying is basically you could run your own small label, which is specific to what you do, and the ownership could almost be distributed like a small startup. So the guy who is your fan, but draws your album art, is also, you know, a 5% owner in this small startup, which is your brand, which is your artist. Does that then mean that it negates the need for like these labels in the future? Like, where do you see them interacting with the music industry in the future, if this is the future of how artists are going to sort of interact with each other?
Well, it's hard to say because people are slave to what's easy. I mean, we use Spotify. Spotify is easy for me. That's how I listen to all my music. Spotify, the tool to listen to music, but I don't like Spotify as an artist because they don't pay me. They pay the developers.
Yeah.
All the money that they're making from, right, that is going to a developer, and it's not going to the artist, or we get micro pennies. It's like 0.00004 cents per stream, which is, you know, it's like trying to thread a needle with a needle. It's like, you know,
it's crazy,
a lot of streams, right?
Yeah.
And the other way that the fans don't understand is that as you up as a top tier artist, the higher level streams you have, the more money you make from Spotify, the percentage changes because you're able to negotiate a better deal, right?
Wow.
And so the other thing that people don't know is that here's another big thing with major labels. Remember when Napster kind of tanked the major label system because there was all the, you know, everyone was buying CDs, and then all of a sudden people understood, like, there was MP3s, and then Napster created like downloading, and like college kids were downloading thousands of songs. And then the major labels, instead of getting on board and figuring out how to do that in a legal way and figuring out how to do what young people wanted to do, the Pandora's box had already been opened. They sued everybody. They sued college kids, and they fought it and fought it and fought it and fought it. And they lost that battle. They won a bunch of small cases, but they didn't win the battle against what was happening with music. Because as soon as Apple came up with the idea that you could put, you know, thousands of songs on an iPod, that changed everything, because you were like, well, I don't want it. I just want this stupid little thing. And now it's on your phone. There would be no way, right, to go back. But the thing is, the major labels are always so far behind in the technology that eventually, when that ocean wave, that tsunami passed them by, all they had to do was quietly make deals with the DSPs, Spotify, Apple Music, and everyone else behind the scenes to benefit them in the best way possible. And they also invest in those companies. So if those companies do well, they're making money regardless of what happens to the artists. So the artists are like, oh, I have a terrible deal with Spotify. And the labels are like, yeah, we already have a great backroom deal that nobody knows about. So if Spotify does great, they don't want anything to change. It's the same way as when the CDs were around, or when vinyl was around, or was in cassette tapes. It's like all the same. So there's a part of the music business that we all see, which is the major label. I get a record deal. I'm on MTV. That doesn't exist anymore. But you know what I mean? Like, someone sees me, I'm at the recording console, I'm on tour, I'm playing Coachella. But then there's also the part of the record business with jam bands and bands that don't get any of the industry support, right? So a band like Phish, because that's a well-known jam band. They weren't on the radio. They didn't have videos. Record labels didn't sign them. No, there was nothing. It was just brute force touring. And they still have a massive fan base, and they sell tons of merchandise, and people go on tour with them for like a year, you know, crazy fans.
Oh, wow.
And their fan relationship is like crazy one-to-one. And a lot of jam bands are like that.
Okay.
They don't have industry support. but they have fan base support. Yeah. They're the most ripe for Web3 because all you would need to do is find a better way of them communicating with their fans through a Web3 architecture. And, and boom, it's right there. Now, if enough of those kinds of bands and bands that develop a Web3 presence have good interactions with their fans, and there's not a lot of negative things happening, like fans ripping off fans and, you know, whatever could happen, then enough artists will start saying, I don't need these labels anymore. I'm going to make friends. Like, let's say your band is a really successful touring jam band. And I make electronic music that could be on the jam band scene. And you, as a band who's already in Web3, who has an audience, says, you know what, bro? You're awesome. And I love your music. We can throw you on 30 dates with us. We'll bring you on our label. We'll give you access to our community. We'll do this as a DAO or as a Web3-based contract. And we'll have a small stake in your contract because we believe in you. And, you know, if you blow up, that, you know how the contract works. You can go on forever. You can change, but we'll own a piece of whatever you do. And as opposed to it being 75% or 50% or 25%, you could just say, I'm your bro. Here, give me 2%. Or if you hit these numbers, it goes to 3%. If you hit these numbers, it goes to 5%. Like, it could be cool.
Interesting.
Right? And then you have successful bands who have fan bases, who know their music, dictating what other bands might get a shine because everyone, you're like, I love your music, so I'm going to make money from you. But also, I mean, that's kind of how it works in the major label systems. Like, if you look at Dr. Dre, Dr. Dre signs Eminem, Eminem signs the game signs, right? It goes on, or 50 Cent, up, up, up. But there's a pyramid, and Jimmy Iovine sitting at the top of this, and Dr. Dre sitting underneath that. You know what I mean? They're all, it's all funneling back to one thing.
Yeah.
But it's based in a system that's very hard to break into unless you're, it's not a crowdsourced system. It's an industry-based system.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like any food. You know how food's coming in and out of being popular?
Yeah, no, that's,
like all of a sudden everyone wants frozen yogurt. Right? And there's like a million frozen yogurt places all over the place all of a sudden. You can't force, you know, then like, oh, you know, like there's Pinkberry is everywhere, right?
Yeah.
And Pinkberry then decides they're going to start a, oh, I really like this other, you know, here's the healthy version. I don't know. And they start, like, every time you're popular, you just spawn another thing.
Yeah.
That's what supermarkets are. Right? Supermarkets are like the industry. And a farmer's market is like, yeah, farmer's market is like Web3 in the sense that, like, you only have what people believe in. Yeah. And word of mouth. There's no industry like pumping you at your farmer's market.
That's true.
Either your produce is good and people like that and they want to see you next weekend, or you're like 3 weeks at a farmer's market and you're like, I can't sell my rutabagas. No one's going to come back.
So true. Who would have thought this would come back to farmer's markets? But it's a good analogy.
Just saying. No, that's good.
That's good.
Yeah. Anyway, and I'm just using Web3 like it's like everyone knows what the idea is, but just more of a decentralized way of doing commerce that's not solely based on commerce. So bands need to make money, music needs to make money, artists need to make money. But we can make money together and support each other without having to pay a premium on the services surrounding what we do.
Yep.
Right? Like, again, if you're the great artist that has a regular job but doesn't can't just make a living making band art, but you want to be involved, and you're a marketing person who, again, does the same thing, but you want to, on your free time, you want to spend time marketing bands that you love. And, you know, there's all kinds of things you do in the music business that you might do, you know, if you're a carpenter, right? You know, like, you may just be making shelves all day long, but you really wanted to build a dollhouse. Yeah. I don't know. That's the analogy. You come home and you build your kid a beautiful dollhouse.
Yeah.
And then your neighbor's like, oh, my God, I have to have a dollhouse like that. Yeah. And they're like, you know what? I can only make six of these this year, but you're my neighbor and I love you, so I'm going to make one.
Yeah.
That's kind of what you get out of a DAO.
Yeah.
Because no one has to be in that role all the time.
Yeah.
They can just be invested. Mm-hmm. And the way that it works even better is that, like, so say you're the guy who makes the dollhouse and you can only make six a year, but somehow in this DAO, you realize that everyone wants a dollhouse, but you can only make six. And you're not going to quit your day job. You're not going to become the dollhouse dude, right? So you reach out to the other carpenters, you know, and you're like, you know what? I can make six a year, but we have 52 orders. Like, do you guys want to make some dollhouses? And, you know, you can all be an owner in this company without having to do, you know, I don't know. Like, here's a NFT, you own a percentage of this company, make five doll houses, you make five doll, everyone doll houses. Yeah. ETH for everybody, as we say, ETH for everybody. You know?
Yeah. That's so good.
But that's the exciting part of it all.
One thing you were talking about before, which was a really good analogy, was that farmer's market versus the supermarket. You know, we might actually have some kind of better quality product, which might be the fans don't even know about. You know, the consumers don't even know about this really good, unique niche thing that it's like, oh, this is over here, and this is some standardized thing that we've all gotten used to, so we're just eating the standardized thing. In terms of that concept, I wanted to take that and kind of spin it into the creators that are kind of making the hype and making the TikTok clips and making the content around hooks. So I wanted to talk about, for example, if you take Beeple for the last 2 years in NFTs, if you take Beeple, who did 5,000 days of digital art. He did that really hard work and it actually paid off. And there's probably thousands and thousands and thousands of creators who have made something really similar and really intricate as well, who haven't gotten that 69 million payout. So if you take that, but then you compare it to, say, Bored Ape Yacht Clubs, which had 10,000 different pieces made, and the highest one sold for 3.4 million or whatever, and there's 10,000 of those selling for $1 million each or whatever. So in terms of those, what do you kind of see as the future of hype projects versus having actual like underlying substance, for example, in especially in the music industry?
All right, well, even touching on those guys there, I think Beeple just got insanely lucky at the right place at the right time.
Timing.
Doing something that there was no end goal that was going to become an NFT, right? That he was just doing an exercise in digital art. Yeah. A lot of it was crap. I mean, like, it was just digital art. Like, you make 5,000 pieces, some of it's going to be terrible, right? Yeah. But, you know, everyone told him he was dumb and he's just doing this thing. And there are some people who rinse and repeat without fail, regardless of the end goal. You know what I mean? They just do, they create.
Yeah.
Music has a very big tie into that in the sense of, you have to do a tremendous amount of work that you never get paid for. I mean, if I can list the skills that I have to be a musician and be successful as, like, you know, besides being a record producer, which means I have to know how to use everything in the studio. I'm a songwriter. I'm a lyricist. I write top line, which is the melody on songs. I remix music. I know I'm super proficient in any studio. I know all the digital technology. I know Photoshop. I know Illustrator. I know how to code HTML. I know how to code in general. Like, it goes on, and I have a non-official degree in psychology to deal with artists. You know what I mean? It goes on and on and on and on. And no one ever pays me for that. I just have to want to make music and then find a way to sell my music.
Yeah.
So the creator makes their stuff regardless, and hopefully they have a focus to get it somewhere. Projects like Bored Ape Yacht Club or Azuki, those are cool art projects that they were based on a monetary idea, but they're quality projects that you can really point to and say, from a graphic standpoint, like, that brings value to, I think, to the consumer.
Yeah.
Whether that's worth $1 million or $10 or $5, whatever, that's really for the market to decide.
Yeah,
I don't think they pump the market to feel anyway. I think the marketing around it was good. And, you know, the Bored Ape thing kind of hits the right vibe for where we're at as a society. Like, people are like, life is kind of like Bored Apes. Cool, but is it really that cool? Meh. Yeah. You know, you're like, where's this flying cars at this point? You're like, there's all this, we're having trouble feeding people. We're still, you know, like, there are cool projects and some projects that make no sense whatsoever. You're like, meme projects. Everyone just kind of wants to get rich off of something really dumb.
Yeah.
It's always something I wanted to do, is write a really, really stupid song that makes a ton of money.
Yeah.
Because it's insane. It's hard to sit down and write something that's just daft. And you're like, I'm going to put time behind that and then see if I can make money from it. Because you did, it's dumb. So, like, why are you going to spend time on it? But here's the funny thing that I'm seeing now, just coming back from NFT NYC and seeing some cool projects. Most projects aren't making their mint price anymore because, you know, crypto has dived into whatever. And so there's all of these projects that kind of came together to make money because they saw there was, like, that was the next mode of crypto, like, kind of being into a meme coin, even if the art was cool. And the same thing happens, like hip hop is a great analogy for this. When people made hip hop in the 80s and 90s in New York, there was no money to be made. There was no gangster rapper. There was no fashion. There was no bling. There was none of that. There was a guy DJed, and there was an MC who kept the crowd moving. And eventually, and it was all about the DJ cutting up good records to keep the crowd moving. And the MC would just toast to, like, you know, keep it going and big up the MC. And eventually clubs caught on and people went to pay to go to parties and everyone was having a good time. And then people started making rap records or hip hop records where you started making raps over the hip hop beats, right? And then eventually those independent underground records that nobody wanted to sign started making money. Fast forward like 5, 10, 15 years, the major labels are like, who would not touch hip hop with, you know, like with a, not touching that. They started just manufacturing, you know, like every beef you could possibly imagine. Hip hop is now like a fashion. It's a style. There's the rap game and the bling and the cars and the women and right. All of that becomes like a thing that everyone thinks that hip hop is. It's no, that was manufactured. So once people get keen to the, that you can make money from something, all the players come in and change it. They do it their own version. Like then you had the MC Hammer version of hip hop, where he brought his own thing and he danced and he, you know, like had a million people on stage and he had the hit songs and all that. But that wasn't hip hop per se. It was just entertainment, pop music entertainment with rapping and all that. But, you know, he did it, made a ton of money doing it. And it was, that was a thing. Does it devalue it? No, but it's not the same thing as doing something that you think is cool. And then somebody monetized, you make money from that without knowing. Like rock bands now, they know how they're supposed to look, how they're supposed to play guitar, how they're supposed to like get on stage and hold the microphone. Cause all these people did it before them and they look cool doing it. So there's a blueprint that, that rock fans expect you to dress like this or to, you know what I mean? So I think now because we went up so quickly and we're so down so quickly with crypto and we don't know where that's, what that's going to bounce. Like, you know, this is a dark moment in crypto, right? There's a lot of money that was made on NFT projects that if you didn't cash out, and you didn't catch your crypto out, you're just holding.
Because
you have nothing, right? No one has talked about, and I haven't seen this article, and if you've seen this, that would be great if somebody could share it with me. Like the projects that all had values that were just skyrocketing, like all these really great projects, and all the money that was, you know, the post-sale market and the resale market and all of that stuff, just to see how much money changed hands, and then the value of all that now.
That would be an amazing.
Because, that's because you made something about celebrity, and this made me think about this. So you saw a lot of celebrity jumping on the NFT bandwagon. Some celebrities were really interested in NFTs. Some celebrities were interested in technology, but a lot of them just need to be talking about something. They need to be they need to be part of the next wave of whatever it is that you talk about, and the publicists make you get involved in NFTs to some degree because they're like, you know, I can get a million stories about you talking about NFTs if you just buy a couple NFTs. So if you're spending 30 grand a month on publicity, just go buy a Bored Ape for 70 grand because you're already going to spend that in 2 months anyway. Then we can put you in there. You can be an NFT expert and you can be in every magazine and we can talk about you for the next 6 months. And now everybody's quiet. Well, they're quiet, A, because it's not really great to be talking about NFTs. B, they probably all lost a little bit of money. So that unless you're really in it for the long run, now if you just look at the crypto bump, it was like nothing, nothing, nothing went up. Oh, nothing, nothing, nothing went up. And now we're back to nothing, nothing, nothing.
That's right.
So we're two bumps into this. What happens on the third one? How far does it go up if it goes up again? Like, you know, you could be looking at your next Google.
Yeah.
Like that's how much money could be generated. And maybe that's what, you know, like when you start an engine, turn it over when it's cold. The first time it's like, rah, 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 rah. You know, and then that third one's like, rah, 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 and then the engine's on. Maybe that's what happens. I don't know. Or maybe the whole thing just never starts. You have to call mechanics.
Bro, that's so true. It can go either way, can't it? That's so interesting. And I agree with what you're saying in regards to, you can sort of see the people who are in it for the long haul in the quiet times like now. Like I follow a particular newsletter called The Milk Road, which is a shout out because they're awesome and no affiliation, but they publish their portfolio every morning and it's almost down every morning. They've lost hundreds of thousands of dollars, but they don't care. I agree. It's interesting to see people's responses. I just want to get your take on live events. And so let me just frame this. So I think it could go two ways. The first way is, so let's think about like metaverse concerts, right? We've seen a little bit of that, particularly during the hype moments. And so is there a world where people become so accustomed to being at home that that actually takes off and it takes a large market share of what the live music industry is? Or are people's lives going to become so isolated with work becoming remote and some social interactions becoming remote that those moments of live events are actually so special that they actually almost increase in value in people's minds? Like, what's your take on that kind of stuff?
It's funny because I'm a super social person, but I appreciate the person who has social anxiety and who gets a real personality by living in Second Life, so to speak. You know, people like my son is 10. He loves playing Minecraft. He has his people that he plays with. He has friends in Australia that he's playing with, friends in China. Like they have meetup times, but he's also super social. He plays basketball, does all that kind of, you know what I mean? So he enjoys his online time, but he's not living a VR life. And there are people who will always need some sort of VR life because their social anxieties, I think, are low. But I think it, as bandwidth increases, and this is something that really Apple showed this to all of us. Remember when Apple created the Newton? And the Newton was like this thing that you could draw with a pen, like a pen. It was like an early predecessor to you. Like, it didn't go anywhere. Okay, so it was an early predecessor to the iPhone. It was way ahead of the time. We had no bandwidth at the time. It was like two, you know, like gray. What's that grayscale? Like old computer color, like whatever. And you know, you had to type out with a like a pen your messages. It wasn't texting. It was just way ahead of the time. But the vision was there. But bandwidth wasn't there to make it really interesting for the masses. And now if people focus on infrastructure and we build, you know, we go up to the gigabit, multi-gigabit pipeline in both directions for people where we can build immersive spaces that can also include maybe feeling and touching and some other stuff. And it can be really reactionary. I think that's when you have a nice intersection between real life and online life, where maybe you have an online community where you can spend enough real time with them where you feel like it's an actual immersive experience for you and not just a first person shooter or some sort of game where it looks, the graphics are amazing, but you're doing it, doing an aspect. One of the first things that got me interested in the Web3 world was immersive communities and doing DJ sets and doing music live. And we were actually doing theme songs for companies that do stuff and wanting to sell sort of like, one of the concepts that we had was, you know, when you go and you buy sounds, like you buy an armor and you buy your mask and you buy your new sword and all that other stuff. Well, it's all still in the Web 1.0 world concept that like everything has to sound the way you think it's supposed to sound. Like a laser gun sounds like a laser gun and your sword sounds like a sword. And I was starting to get interested in the idea of like, well, why don't we just sell sound packs like you would a ringtone within the metaverse, where any sound could take over any other sound and you could just skin your sounds. So you don't have to listen to, it could be like, meow, 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 meow. You know, like whatever you're in the mood for, like, you know, it could be like boom, 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 or something that's even quieter, right? So I think that that's kind of like where we're going to move to the next plane. And I would love, I saw it with the Twitch, where a lot of people were trying to do this one-to-many DJ sets, you know, to people that are at home. And it worked really well when we were all in quarantine because you could really just like have a moment connecting with people. And then they were doing it over Zoom with like 1,000 windows open and you could see everyone dancing and doing all that. That was great. But it's never gonna make, would never replace the feeling of like being at an event and just having that emotional experience and the smells and the loudness and the vibe. You know, it's a big thing. But do I think there's a home for both? And do I think both will grow? 100%. You know, I mean, touring wise, like I imagine, I don't know if you know about touring, but one of the problems with touring is that you really only can play venues that pay you enough money to go play them. And if you haven't developed a market yet, it's, you lose money when you play that market. That being said, if you go into even bigger bands, you become a top tier artist. Those artists often can't play smaller areas because the venues aren't big enough for them to afford to bring their crews. So you live in a small town and you miss out unless you drive 4 hours to your city to go see Drake play or whatever. But now what you could do is you could have an NFT or a Web3 based thing where you could buy your tickets and you could get that plus a couple of live intimate, you know, events that would be streamed on a certain date, especially if you couldn't make an event. Like, you know, COVID is a great example. Imagine you buy your $200 ticket to go see Madonna, like doing whatever her vital, like her last tour. You're like, I gotta go. Then you get COVID and you're like, I just lost my 200 and my whole family's going. So I'm out $1,500 and yeah. I'm not going to go get to see Madonna, but you know, like, cause we're sick, but instead you have NFT Web3 and you're like, yeah, oh, but I still get to see her do the intimate thing. Mm. And you know, I could let her know through the NFT that, hey, we didn't make it. Oh, so this is my special concert for people who didn't physically make it because their tickets didn't get scanned because they had some other issue come up. I'm doing a special event for them. Like, there's a lot of really cool ways that you could, you know, things could be a little bit more proactive and interactive in that sense.
Yeah.
And I really do believe in the online communities. It's just, how do you make it more than just avatar standing around being like,
right.
Like, I've seen some of that. And I'm like, cool. I want to be in on that. Yeah. But I, you know, like my avatar going like this while I'm DJing is cool, but it's not the same thing. And why I consider that to be Web 1.0, it's like, remember Web 1.0 is when you made a website and you made the website look like a book, or you made a website look like switches were on there. Like, oh, I got to flip the switch. And like that's a Web 1.0 mentality where you're trying to imitate the real world. What I think needs to happen is people transcend via bandwidth, because the bandwidth allows you to do so much more things. So you can say, I'm not going in a room to go listen to this guy play. I'm going to go in while I'm playing my game and I'm going to download the music pack for this. And I'm going to get to play Ming's, you know, Canyon version 7. Like, that's what I'm playing today. And I'm going to play in the room that's sponsored by his music. And I get to play listening to that music. And then, you know, it's not being trapped in this Web 1.0 version of like, I went to the concert and I'm trapped in Ming's concert. Wouldn't it be better if you're playing and you're just like, no, I don't like this. Actually, you know what? I want to see Slayer. So scroll. Oh, there's Slayer. Okay, I'm in.
Yeah. No, I think I think what you're saying is so true. I like your analogy there of like the Newton device, although I hadn't really heard much of it. Like, it makes so much sense when the first time you see technology, I think if you look back on most of society, often it does imitate something that we've already seen in our world. You know, they're just imitating, maybe at that point was like, oh, let's put the keyboard of a typewriter and it's going to kind of look like a piece of paper. And then now we like talk to Siri and she does everything. And it would have been ridiculous at that point in time to go, no, I think it should look like a piece of paper, be much smaller, and we talk to it. So everyone would have said, well, that doesn't make any sense. No one will use that. But after iteration, further down the line, we start seeing it move further away from what reality usually used to look like. And now it's its own technology, its own thing. And I agree, it'd be really interesting to see where that goes for metaverse concerts and stuff. So,
especially when you know, like Siri is in your speaker now,
right?
It's not just in your computer. Yeah. It's like, or in your phone or in your earbuds. It's like in your speaker. You're like listening to music and you just turn to your speaker and be like, order toilet paper, you know, and your speaker orders toilet paper for you. Right.
It's ridiculous.
Like that's sort of the way it's hard to imagine.
Yeah.
Where we're going to be in 6 months or a year, but I do think it's based on bandwidth and speed to market. I do think that's what it is.
Yeah.
And you know, once people have enough bandwidth to do some of these ideas, think about a room instead of a TV room. Your whole room has photo cells all over the walls where you know you have enough bandwidth, and every wall now changes into something else.
Yeah.
Then you're in an immersive space.
It's true.
You could be with friends in an immersive space where it seems like you're with your other friends and there's no wall in between. There's been a couple of movies lately or shows where that things are like that. And you feel like you're in the room with people like right here.
Yeah.
But they're, it's because the, you know, they figured all that mirroring out.
Yeah, man. I think it's been phenomenal. I really appreciate everything you said. The way you communicate is really powerful. And so this is a fantastic podcast. Thank you so much for coming on.
Great, man. I appreciate it.